Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I'm looking forward to our show because it's a little different than what it normally is, but I think it is extremely timely. We are living in, as I always say, interesting times, and I don't think people are taking a step back to figure out what's going on. There's a bigger picture here, and we're all sucked into the day by day, just survive, get to the next, you know, meeting the next level, whatever we're doing. And I think we're not helping ourselves. We're living in fear and anxiety. And I think we need to really, honestly, take a step back and look at a bigger picture. And I think knowledge is power, as I always say. And if you can understand how we're being moved like chess pieces, it allows us to withdraw our consent, take our power back, become human again, quite frankly. And today we're going to speak with Miss Tessa Lina. She's a strongly opinionated artist and writer living in New York. She's a classically trained pianist and singer, fronting the band called Tessa Makes Love. She was born and raised in Moscow, and as a teenager, she had the honor of performing her own composition at the Moscow Conservatory. Over the course of her life, she's done music, linguistics, Tibetan studies, and has also worked with Indian Country Today, a Native American publication. Currently, she writes on Substack, going by the name of Tessa Fights Robots, and her work is about being human in a world of technology, big data, and machine-like people. And I think that's exactly where we are, except we're not really aware of what's going on. So I want to thank you so much, Miss Lina, for joining me. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, Dr. George. It's my honor to be on the show. And I apologize, it's New York, so the background is a tiny bit noisy.
No problem. New York. No problem. I'm a former New Yorker, you know, Brooklynite, so I totally get it. Just the fact that you're here on and talking with me and our listeners is totally worth any background noise, trust me. So, thank you. Let's get started. I mean, you have an amazing blog called Tessa Fights Robots, and I found your blog because I read one of your articles, and it was titled The Last Squeeze, Digital Colonization as Manifest Destiny 2.0. And it just, it put together everything that I think about what's going on. Just because it's digital, just because it's newfangled and everybody's supposed to be being more efficient, I don't think it's better. I think it's making us less human in a lot of ways. We don't talk to each other. We don't touch each other. We fight. We look at each other as surfaces, and we assume what's behind what person looks like is how they think and what makes them tick. And is that the bottom line of the digital colonization, of making us separate from each other and actually not be a society anymore?
Oh, I think it is all that you said and then a lot more. That is a lot worse. It seems like, well, let me start with a background. Mm-hmm. Because I did work with a native publication, Indian Country Today, for several years, about 8 years. So I got a chance to really dig and learn about the history of the original people of this land. And it also made me think about my own people, and I'm Russian, I'm from Moscow, because Russians went, probably like many cultures, went through the same process, but centuries earlier. And that process of, you know, somebody telling you that no, the culture that is yours is no longer good. And in my case, it was my own leaders in 11th century telling that to the people. So the traditional culture, no good. You got to convert. You got to leave your ways behind. And if you don't, then you're going to die. That kind of thing, mm-hmm, is obviously extremely traumatic. And people of this land, the original people of this land, went through that a lot more recently due to colonization. And I think I get a feeling that what we're going through right now is a more treacherous way of doing kind of the same thing. It goes beyond just separating people, because from everything I've been researching, and I've been researching big tech for several years, due to my involvement in music activism. So there is a theology to big tech, and their theology is about merging people with machine. And as crazy as it sounds, it is presented as a serious thing, as something that ought to happen, and it's going to serve the evolution of human beings or human species. So what I'm observing right now is an attempt at actually doing that. And that cannot possibly end well for any of us, because we are meant to be human. We are meant to love each other and to touch each other and to communicate from our hearts and not just as an algorithm. And that entire theology is essentially about equating people with machines. So they're trying to bring about a world in which we can grow machines and give birth to machines and grow human beings and treat human beings like we're devices and connect all of us to the internet of bodies, which is unfortunately not a conspiracy theory, but it's presented in official government documentation, white papers and policy papers. So the concept of merging people with machines is, unfortunately, as crazy as it sounds, is fully official. And the way I see the digital colonization that I was talking about, it is like that manifest destiny that caused so much suffering over the centuries on this continent and, well, all over the world, really. Mm-hmm. And same thing, but apply to everybody across the board with technology in mind. So, like before, they would treat the land and the people of this land and everywhere where colonizers went, they would treat it as a resource, not as something to be respected, not as something to treat as equals, but as something to just use as a resource. So I think right now, essentially, the entire humanity is at the receiving end of a very similar ideology wrapped in something different as far as wording, because now they're calling it Fourth Industrial Revolution or the Great Reset or capitalism, which is yet new branding around it. But the concept is that we no longer have free will. We no longer have feelings as such. We're just a resource for them to manage, like cattle. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that's nothing to look forward to for any of us. And my story that you talked about, that you mentioned, and thank you very much for your kind words, it was looking at the technology they're using, mm-hmm. and at the theology, essentially. And another thing that I want to add here, I started researching that before 2020, actually several years prior, because as a musician, I found that big tech was destroying the industry, so musicians stopped eating, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, musicians who could afford having like a middle-class lifestyle without being extremely, extremely famous, that was gone because big tech introduced their own system and they channeled all the income that was previously going to middle-class musicians, they channeled it towards tech platforms. So as a musician, I discovered that the hard way. So I started reading about big tech and their philosophy and their economic models, and I ran into transhumanism because that's a part of it. And I started writing philosophical pieces about it and articles and stories about it. But I was thinking that the really horrible thing may happen maybe one day after my lifetime. So it did not really sound realistic because, in all honesty, it's a crazy idea, merging people with machines or trying to be immortal by uploading what they perceive as digital content onto a computer. I read about it. I thought, okay, this is really, really crazy. They're probably going to try it, but sometime in the future, it's not going to impact me. But nonetheless, it's sad. And then all of a sudden last year, all those ideas started coming at us and they're trying to implement it. And that really woke me up and made me outspoken about the current situation, because you cannot be happy and you cannot be human if you're treated as a machine, if you have tech inserted into you that connects you to the internet, which is, again, the official goal, unfortunately. And I just don't want to be in the world where we're all running around like zombies, or headless chickens, like devices. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be fun at all. So we have to wake up to our humanity and understand what's happening and actually hold on to our humanity as hard as we can, because I think our life depends on that.
I couldn't have said it better. And, you know, I want people to think about what you said, because it's a great foundation for our conversation, because it's like they use the same template over and over again. And you described, I didn't know this was going on in the music industry, but the same things happened in the medical industry. So let's talk about that when we take our first, while we take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Tessa Lina. She has a website, Tessa Fights Robots, and she has multiple articles which are well thought and I think passionate and has energy that we all need to understand what's happening. And it's almost like it's, you know, you put something in water and you slow boil it and the heat's going up, but you're not really paying attention until it's too late. I have no idea what was going on before the break. You were talking about what it's like to be a musician. The same things happen in medicine, except I think that these powers, these supposed powers that be, think that AI is better than humanity. I've heard, you know, from a medical standpoint, we're getting articles written for us that are telling us AI is better than a doctor at diagnosis. And you know what that comes with? That comes with who gets to get the treatment because of algorithms and because of what the computer calculates as going to be a successful treatment. It doesn't take into consideration what it means to be uniquely human and the human touch. It doesn't take that into consideration at all. So when you start talking about euthanasia and, hey, you've lived a good life, so now you should be made comfortable. And just like in the economic system, we have euphemisms in medicine that the same thing's happening here, something called comfort care. Sounds really, you know, innocuous, but what that means is you're withdrawing care from somebody until they pass away. So this is something that affects everybody. And I think it's gone through each successive part of our society. And I think it probably did start with artists, with people who are doing it for love. And there's a different mindset. It's not mercenary. It's about energy. And if you can take that out and digitize it and make it, I guess, pedestrian, then it kind of breaks what means, you know, part of what glues us together as a society. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I'm so moved by what you said, and I have so much to say in response. Thing is that with musicians, it started happening probably 2 decades ago, before I even started thinking about it. And I was reading books, for example, Nicholas Carr is a wonderful author, and he has written a number of books on automation and the impact of big tech on our culture and society. And I remember, well, medicine, in my opinion at the time, I don't know how accurate it was, but in my opinion at the time, medicine was doing okay, while musicians were really already impacted heavily. And I was reading a book by Nicholas Carr, and he was talking about how automation, he predicted, would eventually really degrade medicine, because doctors would be forced to be, they would be reduced to like appendix to a computer, mm-hmm. with all the legal contacts, especially in the US, where doctors are obviously afraid to be sued. So, and doctors would be forced to strictly follow whatever AI tells them. And I was thinking, dear Lord, it's accurate. It's going to happen. And that was several years ago. And it seems like it is happening today. And I'm so amazed to hear that from you, that you've been observing it in your own field.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off, but they did it.
Go ahead.
They did it by strangling doctors in terms of money. So it started back in 2001 when we had the corporate-driven healthcare, where you had HMOs and the insurance companies rose out of the ashes to become the go-between between the patient and the doctor. So they controlled the pot of money, and they got to dole out what the care was. That led doctors to leave private practice because they couldn't stay open. They're not business people on average. Sell their practices to the hospitals, and then they became corporate drones at that point. Whoever has the pocketbook has the power. So if we know that 2/3 of doctors left private practice and now are employed, we're seeing now what's happening with COVID and this big mindset of do what we're told just because we say so, not Hippocratic Oath driven, not patient-centered, it's corporate driven. So that's what happened to us. We left, you know, fear drove us, unfortunately, sometimes greed, I would think too, into this system. And it's like a big Pac-Man. Once it's got you, it really doesn't want to let you go.
I mean, it breaks my heart to hear that from you. I mean, it confirms my worst suspicions and also my conversations with other doctors as of 2020. But it still breaks my heart because I still remember the time when I thought it was not happening to doctors yet. And I think probably musicians and photographers and filmmakers were one of the first ones getting hit because once music piracy and Napster became a staple thing, then overnight, nobody was buying CDs, nobody was buying music. And the ironic thing is that a lot of people think that that was a natural development, that people all of a sudden started pirating and, you know, music labels are the villain and that's just freedom for the people, knowledge for the people. But in fact, because I researched it, I know that that was a very carefully designed cultural shift. And it was designed and funded by the Googles of the world. They wanted that to happen. And there was even legislation that preceded Napster in 1998 called DMCA that was designed originally pretty much written by the telecom industry for the sake of paying off for the infrastructure they invested in. And then the tech companies were kind of grandfathered in and they really wanted people to steal stuff, like steal movies and music, because that would justify the traffic, and this way they would survive as internet companies and as Googles of the world. And they lobbied and bullied, and they knew exactly what they were doing. So that was a business plan. And then, of course, naturally, then musicians stopped eating because nobody is buying their music. Now they have all the classic joke was, well, you can still sell T-shirts. And then musicians started complaining, and of course, nobody listened because, well, it's just musicians. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we can't eat. And there were those mega protests with 3.5 people of hungry musicians. And people would go, well, get a job. So nobody really cared. And I remember back in the day, we were kind of joking, saying, well, big tech touched the music industry. Now musicians can't eat. I mean, like, God forbid. I mean, like, they go, if they try to do that with the food industry or with the farming, then we're all screwed. Because it's just, it's been proven that it doesn't work for the survival. And now with horror, I have to say that they are doing it to farmers as well and to the food industry. So if that continues this way, the prospects are not particularly cheery. So we better wake up.
I mean, you just mentioned, I mean, as I said before, it's every single industry. And you're right. The food industry, what is it, like three big conglomerates that own everything pretty much? And they're offshoots. So you think it's a brand that's a standalone organic brand. It's actually owned by, you know, a big food industry. I mean, it's like one big soup. So I remember, let's go back to food for a second. I remember when they started feeding the cattle corn instead of letting them be grass fed. And I remember years ago saying to myself, this is not going to bode well for our health. We're going to have cholesterol issues and heart issues from all the fat that's going to be, you know, the changes in the quality of the meat that we're eating. And lo and behold, we have seen heart disease, cholesterol, cancer, obesity, everything's gone through the roof. And instead of us having sugar, we have high fructose corn syrup, which is toxin in itself. And that leads to all sorts of medical problems. It's almost as if it's designed to make us captive in some way, whether that's health, whether that's by your job, whether that's by your social mores, whether it's by making you feel good or not being part of a whole. It's really mercenary. And it's, I think you're right, very well thought out.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right, because I think even with what you were just talking about, in terms of food and the quality of food and how it impacts our health, if the same rough group of investors, and I'm talking high-level investors, own the pharma companies, the big pharma companies, and the big food companies, it kind of works out for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they create a production system that is expensive on the R&D side, but then cheap on the production, and then it's bad for our health, then we're entirely captive in the system where sooner or later we're going to get sick. And then they sell us expensive treatments. And if at the same time they also censor less expensive treatments or alternative medicines, that is perfect for their business model, mm-hmm. then we're just milked from cradle to grave.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, people need to go and look at the healthcare system and the medical education system and the Flexner report and how there was so much natural methods of treatment and naturopaths. It was not, we weren't separated. And then it became pharmaceutical driven. Everything else gets thrown out the window and made basically illegal, either by de facto or because you've just put someone out of business by having them be, having the FDA and other things come down on them. So it's a system that's rigged for them to win. And they don't want competition, apparently. They can't take competition because I think if they actually had competitors, they would lose every single time. You have an artist who is self-made, who, for example, who does their own thing, who's doing it from their soul versus somebody who's working on an algorithm using the same program. I mean, it's just no one's going to want to listen to that any more than they're going to want to go to a doctor who just gives an antibiotic and doesn't even listen to them and types on a computer. I mean, this whole system is completely corrupt. And I'm so happy that I'm not the only one who thinks this way. But I want to jump forward. And when we come back from the break, talk a bit about how this, how COVID has changed, or was it designed to help it come in faster? That's my question. And on that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Tessalina. And before the break, we were talking about a bigger picture. And now we're jumping forward to now. And apparently nothing's new under the sun from what you're telling me. And this COVID rollout and the pandemic and how it's being manipulated at every turn to keep us in captivity, to keep us in fear, to keep us in our homes. Now we're dividing each other on vaccinated versus non-vaccinated. So there's always something that's, I think it's designed to divide and conquer. But my biggest question was, what came first, the reset or COVID? I mean, is COVID a cover to actually bring this in? Because it seems to me we've lost a lot of our autonomy. And our economy has been massively upended. People who own their own businesses have lost them. People have been driven into corporate America. Corporate America is making mandates that are crazy. What's your take on that? It's a big question, but I'm just curious.
That is definitely a big question. Well, in the very beginning last spring, I was probably just like everybody else. I had no idea what was happening. And I was alarmed and tried to be safe and did all those things for a few weeks. But then I became suspicious very quickly because suddenly I saw all those measures and things that I was researching or writing about. All of a sudden it was all happening. And I knew for a fact that the conversation about doing things like taking education online or removing much privacy from health information or various types of surveillance and tracing, that all those things, they did not just show up as a health response or response to anything because they were in the talks. And for example, Google was trying very, very hard and really bullying to take education online and to own as much data as possible, student data, children data. They were trying very, very hard. But before the pandemic, they could not get very far. I mean, they went into that a little bit, but they could not get as much as they wanted. But then all of a sudden this happened. And here we go. No privacy anymore. There's a video of people's homes and children's data is constantly surveilled and mined, and they can use it to build their AI, which was one of the big business goals for tech companies to begin with, because they do think that they can build an AI so perfect in controlling and monitoring everything that they actually do need to collect all the information in the world and constantly process it so that they can improve their perfect AI, and then they control the world essentially. And unfortunately, as crazy as it sounds, it actually is a business plan that they've been on record even expressing. So going back to your question, when all the things started unfolding, that reminded me of the things that I was already writing about or researching, that just that made me so suspicious. I mean, I could not undo my research. I could not unlearn what I have learned previously, so that didn't make sense. And then when logic stopped being a factor at all, when things were flipped all the time, like mask, no mask, mm-hmm. no mask, double mask, that didn't make sense at all. And plus, I grew up, you know, my mom was a doctor and my grandmother was a doctor. And I mean, I have a lot of doctor friends, and I asked them early on their opinions on various facts, like the mask. They kind of got my opinions in order. Mm-hmm. And then when it started flipping, then I was like, wait, something doesn't make sense. And then one of the things that happened very early last year, being early in the pandemic, last March, I was in line to a grocery store wearing a mask, fairly scared, like everybody. And, well, maybe not scared, but, you know, at least like alert.
Right.
And then I'm there in a line wearing a mask, and a drunk person comes by, and I smelled every drop of liquor that he had in his organism. And I was thinking, uh-oh, if, you know, like, if he has any virus, then I surely got it now.
That's
so
a good
that
point.
Kind of confirmed me in the opinions of my doctor friends, who told me that it's, you know, I can wear it if I want to, but really, you know, nothing much useful. So I was like, okay, maybe they were right. And so, but then when my own senses contradicted what the news was telling me, then I was like, there's something weird. And then another thing that made me skeptical was that the techniques that I recognized in messaging were fairly identical to the messaging of my abusive ex-husband. And that was an extremely traumatic experience for me years ago. And I went through the whole thing where I was in denial. I could not accept the fact that I was in an abusive relationship, and I paid a very dear price because it got pretty awful mm-hmm. in the end. So, but when I started recognizing those signs, like that time I really learned. It cost me dearly. It was extremely traumatic. It took me many years to recover, but I recovered and I healed. And then I know that when somebody tells me that my senses are inadequate, I should turn them off, or I'm weird, or I'm just silly. When I hear that, I know that they're not my friend.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started getting that message, that kind of messaging 24/7 plus fear plus intentional stress creation that I also recognized because I studied different kinds of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is not normal. There's something up with that. This is just weird. Doesn't make sense. And then, of course, as reports started coming out about suppression of medicines, and then that didn't make any sense at all. So as of the second time, a little more than suspicious, let me put it this way. So I think that I would be extremely shocked and surprised, and I don't think it's even possible that it is just a reaction to the pandemic. I don't think it's even possible, given that, you know, everything that happened. I am philosophically agnostic, meaning that anything in the universe is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And if I see facts to that effect, I'm willing to consider essentially any hypothesis. But so far, it sounds like mythology, because based on the events and based on the course of actions and how nobody seemingly cared about health. And in my own, you know, home city in New York, we all know how Cuomo sent COVID patients to nursing homes
mm-hmm.
and no big deal, and giving legal immunity to the owners of the nursing home. So it did not look like anybody cared about anybody's health. And so that does not correlate to the messaging about great care. Plus, I think denial of human contact was altogether blatantly evil. I mean, I can see how obviously if somebody is sick and nobody knows what this disease is, then it makes sense to isolate for the sick person. I mean, that's just common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not odd. But when they're telling healthy people to isolate and to distance, while in fact it's been grown up with doctors. And even I, not being a doctor, know that asymptomatic transmission has not been a big deal ever. So that creates just like one cognitive dissonance, one illogic over another illogic, over another illogic, over another illogic. And mm-hmm. at some point, you just see that the entire tower is built of those little pieces that are not logical and that fall apart if you just start digging with some integrity. And yet, nonetheless, they're just producing this stress and they're driving people crazy. Mm-hmm. And stress is not your friend. If anybody cares about health, the last thing that they want to do is to stress people out, because stress alone can mess up the immune system. So that just did not make any sense at all. And unfortunately, then, as I saw people gradually losing their minds, I was kind of predicting it early in the pandemic, because I was telling people, you've got to snap out of it now, because if you don't, this whole process of boiling the water slowly, mm-hmm. you will not notice. You will just, you know, you'll lose it. And then that actually happened. And that makes me really mad, because that was preventable. But nonetheless, we're in a very strange place right now.
We are. And, you know, you've just described the cognitive dissonance. And I think people, there'll be a group of people who withdraw because of it doesn't make sense to them. But then they put another layer of emotionality on top of it. If you're a good person, you want to protect other people, you will do X, right? It's do it for your neighbor. Someone using the analogy of, I'm going to put sunscreen on myself to protect my neighbor. I mean, that's the mindset. It's just, it used a veneer of morality and ethics to make you go along and to make people look at you as the enemy. If you question, if you do, you know, realize it's cognitive dissonance and you withdraw your consent from it, there's a whole layer of people from an emotional standpoint. I don't think they even think it's just driven by how it feels. And that's a very difficult nut to crack. I don't think you can. When people get to that point, how do you pull them back from that emotionality?
Well, that's a very difficult question. I think in some cases it's easier than in others. And then in yet other cases, we'll have to wait for life to take care of it. It might take years or decades, who knows? I mean, I always have hope for people to snap out of it the soonest. And I do have hope as I'm saying that. Now time will tell what happens. But that technique of using compassion and various genuinely good language mm-hmm. to make people betray themselves, like, to me, it's blatantly evil. I do not blame the people who go for that, like regular people, because they're just being abused and they're victims of abuse. But the people who do that knowingly, and it's a fact that there have been teams of psychologists and PR firms and marketers and people who know how to manipulate public opinion, how to manipulate emotions, mm-hmm. they've been officially hired to create with campaigns. To create campaigns against hesitancy or to create compliance. And to me, it is just existentially evil, truly, because, I mean, that's the worst thing you can do. Take something that is about compassion and love and saving others and turn it upside down. And I think the problem in this culture, like in the American culture, as seen through my eyes of an immigrant, the community has been kind of lacking, at least, you know, in the past, you know, 10 or 20 years. And a lot of people are really missing that sense of community. That's an instinct. That's something that we all want, and we all want to be good. Well, the majority of us anyway. And so when a state entity or a corporate entity or a merger of the two, which is what's happening right now, when they design a campaign to be this kind of like spiritual replacement, in a completely upside down way, and they appeal to this goodness in people, to this sense of wanting to do good and wanting to help, and they completely hijack it and make people self-betray. And then people get attached to it because they make it like an addiction, essentially, because now they're addicted to this notion and it's very hard to pull them out of it. It is extremely treacherous, and well, there got to be justice at some point somewhere on that, because that's just evil.
I agree with that completely. And Let's take our last break, because that's something that people really need to get their heads around. I don't think people can wrap their minds around something being that evil with intention. I don't think most people, their minds don't go there. So they can't actually make that leap. And we're going to have to if we want to protect ourselves and our humanity. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Tessa Lina. Her website is tessa.substack.com. And you also have a Twitter handle, don't you?
Yes, it's Tessa Makes Love, one word.
Awesome.
T-E-S-S-A Makes Love.
People need to go to your follow you on Twitter and also go to your website, because this is how you start educating yourself. I want to just touch base about this global economy and this reset. And I want to revisit this Internet of Things, because that's something that I think that people have heard that word. They think that they understand what it means. And of course, it's all innocuous when they begin, right? So connecting your appliances to the internet and knowing how your temperature in your house is awesome. You know, it's not such a big deal. But we're now talking about people being added to that Internet of Things, aren't we? I mean, it's all about manipulation or control from top down of everything, not just your appliances, but how you think, where you work, who you associate with, how you interact with the government. Can you speak to that?
Yes, and it is such a big topic. And I think an important thing to realize is that it is not at all a conspiracy theory, because there are government documents in white papers and actually web pages on government websites. At least, for example, in the UK and in Canada, they have official government web pages talking about the fourth industrial revolution and merging people with machines. And even as I say that, and I've read those web pages and I know they exist, even as I say that, I feel crazy, because the same part of me goes, no, it cannot be, because it's just too weird. And as weird as it is actually what they're trying to do. And I think this is the hardest part for most people to wrap their head around, because it is genuinely so deranged and so bizarre and so different from how we have been thinking about life, well, forever, that it is impossible to accept, or very hard to accept, that it is in fact the essence of the reform that is being attempted upon us. And for myself, I found the best way to look at it is that, you know, every now and then, there are some crazy reformers who come to the people and try to force them into a kind of reality that people would not necessarily consciously accept. And that's done either through violence or through trickery, or usually through the combination of both. And as examples, of course, we can think about crusades or forced conversion of nations to a different religion that they did not consciously want or did not choose. And that has happened in history multiple times. So we kind of accept that, yes, it happened in the past and it was unpleasant and it came with bloodshed and rape and pillage and all sorts of destruction. And it sucks that we as people suddenly are living through one. And they're trying to do it seemingly in a less overtly violent way, because it's, you know, we're being cajoled into that and saying how convenient it is, and there's going to be a device implanted into you that's going to monitor your health and, you know, help you be healthier, and of course your health data is also going to be wired to the mothership and it goes way beyond and into much darker areas. But what they're trying to sell as the Internet of Bodies, and again, I want to emphasize that that's an official concept, and it has to do with treating people like devices. So from the management perspective, it's asset management. If every living form is an asset like a device, and whoever considers themselves the owner of the world, and of course they have to be deranged sufficiently to think of the world this way, but nonetheless, you know, it exists, unfortunately. And so they want to manage every asset, every living being that is connected to the internet via like is an implant or something, you know, technologically the technology is there. The military has been working on that for a very long time. And so then everybody's connected to this network. And the idea is that people as devices, they're both readable and writable. So it can be a two-way communication. And of course, it is very unlikely it can end well. And I'm not even talking about the direct health impact of that much wireless radiation, because that's another kind of worms. And but in terms of control, it turns people into zombies. And you know, I have a story that I was reading. Well, there's a book by Mala Domasome, who is a Dagara elder and Dagara culture in Africa. And he was telling the story of his village, how a while ago, the missionaries came, the French missionaries in this case. And so they did the usual thing, like the missionary school, like the settlement. And so they offered to the villagers to, they promised to buy their produce at the end of the year, as long as the farmers purchase on credit their fertilizer. And so some of the farmers thought it was a good idea, so they purchased the fertilizer. And of course, the land didn't like the fertilizer, so there was no crops. So they ended up in debt with no crops because they were seduced by this thing. They thought it was going to be wonderful and modern. So that is how seduction works. So similarly, what they did in the United States it was an official conspiracy that was documented in various letters by the officials of that time, where they would intentionally set up shops close to the Indian territory, Indian as in Native American, and so they would allow natives to buy things on credit, and eventually they would be so in debt that they would have no choice than to cede some of their land. And that was a strategy. It was not a random thing. So that is how they were biting into the land that even officially was by treaty native, even after the, you know, the invasion. So all those strategies, they are not new. And tying it back to the Internet of Bodies, of course they would say first that, oh, it's going to be wonderful. We are going to monitor how many steps you made, or, you know, what your heart rate is, or what your sugar is for diabetics. And it's just going to make things more convenient. So, and then eventually, well, guess who is going to pay the price? It's the person who was seduced. And you can't even blame the person who was seduced, because it works like a spell almost. There's pressure, or everybody's doing that, like peer pressure. But then in the end, it's about not just data mining, but it goes into much darker territory, because there has been plenty of research into technologies of like brain-computer interaction that is two-way, meaning that, for instance, the military has always been very interested in how to impact human behavior. And that's not a theory. It's a fact. They've been very interested in that. And in the recent past, that technology has made great advances. And honestly, I don't think it can even work as they hope, because even one person in their own mind, I mean, good luck counting the sheep while trying to fall asleep. I mean, that's just, you know, it's a fantasy that it can be easy. But what can be done is a lot of havoc, because if somebody is trying to interfere with like very refined electrical circuitry or electromagnetic, like it is, we don't even know what it does. We don't even know the fine design.
No.
Even without any bad intention, it'll create tremendous havoc. And I don't think we can count on the lack of bad intention. So it is extremely dangerous, like extremely, extremely dangerous. And on the level of technology, of course, the trend is like smart fabrics. And the idea is, oh, you're wearing a dress, and it records your heart rate and takes your vitals. And isn't it wonderful? But even without any bad intention in terms of trying to write upon you as a device, or even data mining to use it against you, or even to sell advertising, imagine being wrapped in a dress that is Wi-Fi. And like, it's going to be just like wonderful for your body. So
No, I can't even imagine that. I mean, geez, what you just described it's man-made, therefore it's flawed. And there's no way that man can make something that's perfect. It's never going to happen. And, you know, I hate it. The show is so short. We have like a minute and a half left. And I just want to make sure first that we get all of your information out so people can follow your blogs, listen to your music, and follow you on Twitter.
So the easiest way to find me, and it has my most recent work, is TESSA, my first name, Tessa, .substack.com. And if you go to the About section, it links to everything. My Twitter, which is Tessa Makes Love, and I also host a podcast that is called Make Language Great Again. And it's about language, and it's used to control people or to heal, because language can be used in many ways. And my music, my band is called Tessa Makes Love. You can Google it. But if you just go to tessa.substack.com, you'll find all of my information.
Now, Tessa, I'd love to have you back, because language is how they're trapping us. You know, they're changing the meanings of words, making euphemisms that sound innocuous, and they're the absolute opposite. And people, it's propaganda on steroids. And I think people need to understand how language is being used as a weapon. So I would love to have you back so we can have that conversation.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to. And Awesome. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I want to thank you for your time. It was a pleasure speaking with you. And I look forward to doing it again.
Thank you, Dr. George. It was indeed a pleasure for me as well.
And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.